All right, welcome to another episode of Piecing It Together, the podcast where we take a look at a new movie and try to figure out what movies inspired it. And today on the show, it's time for another M. Night Shyamalan film. I'm so excited to be talking about this one. We are talking about Knock at the Cabin, his latest film, which is in theaters right now, and you should definitely go see. It's fantastic, and I had a great time with it. And joining me to talk about it is Manish from It Pod to Be You. And I'm happy to have Manish back on the show, and we have a great conversation. Lots of great puzzle pieces on this one, so that is coming up here in a second. Before we get to it, I do want to remind you, as always, to make sure you're subscribed to Piecing It Together wherever you listen to podcasts. You can follow us on social media at Piecing Pod. Join the Facebook group Popcorn and Puzzle Pieces, where we continue the conversation about all the movies we talk about here on the show. And don't forget, we have a live show coming up on Thursday, February 23rd. I'm going to keep talking about it on every episode until we get there. But yeah, we're going to be talking about Cocaine Bear at Maya Cinemas here in Las Vegas, North Las Vegas, actually. And yeah, it's Thursday, February 23rd, 7 p.m. The movie starts right at 7, and then we will be talking about the film with Jason Harris from Awesome Movie Year, as well as Luella Chavez and Michael Keen. We got a great lineup there. Lots of fun people who going to help me piece together this insane movie about a bear that's on cocaine. So come on out if you're in Las Vegas. We hope to see you there. You can win tickets. Check the show notes. There's a link, or just go to the website. There's a link right there on the front page, piecingpod.com, or buy a ticket too. That's great. And come see the movie with us and listen to us talk about it. So with that said, let's talk about Knock at the Cabin. All right, it's time for another M. Night Shyamalan film. I'm always excited to talk about M. Night, and joining me today is Manish from It Pod to Be You. How you doing?
I'm doing great. How are you?
I am awesome. I am excited to talk about this one. It's been a bit of a, I don't know, hot button topic on the Twitters and all that stuff. Oh, like, yeah. Everybody's got wildly different takes on this thing. So
that's one of the great things about M. Night is, you know, if anything, he inspires conversation, and I think that's all he really wants. You know, I feel like in several interviews I've heard him say, like, I don't care if you like the movie or not. I just want you to see it and talk about it. So I'm sure he's happy with whatever is going on.
Yeah, absolutely. And he's always been somebody who, it's always been like caught up on the whole twist thing, but I think it's more about getting people talking. And like, that's always been the goal. And that has always been the case too, with all of his movies, even the ones that aren't as celebrated, but it's nice to see these last few have been, he's definitely back on the more positive side critically and, you know, audiences in general. And, I'm right there. I'm very excited to talk about this movie. We'll get into all our thoughts on this along the way. But I don't know. You know, before we get into puzzle pieces, I figure we might as well bring this up quickly before we get into it. Had you read the book? Were you familiar with the book?
No, I hadn't read the book. I don't think I even heard of it until this movie was in production. I'd like to read the book. Actually, I'm more into audiobook these days, but I'd like to listen to someone else read the book to me.
Sure.
Because it sounds really interesting, and much like with his previous movie, Old, I feel like he took a concept that he really spoke to him and really did his own thing with it, which I appreciate. Because, I don't know, for me, when it comes to book-to-movie adaptations, I like it when directors really make it their own and sure. Kind of remorph the piece into something that speaks to them. And from what I've heard, I think he came across the story first as a screenplay, and then read the book after kind of signing on to produce it and then direct it. So
right,
yeah. So how about you? Have you read it, or do you know anything about it?
I'm an idiot when it comes to books. I haven't read it. I haven't read many books. But yeah, I did read up though on like some of the changes and everything. And it sounds like a really interesting take on the material. But like you said, like with Old, I feel like he just saw this world that would be a really fun kind of playground to set some characters loose in and, like, you know, just kind of take the basics and do his own thing with it. And I think that, yeah, I agree. Like, you know, that you want to see the filmmaker still make their film. You know, I'm not here for the adaptation of The Cabin at the End of the World. I'm here for the new M. Night Shyamalan film.
Right,
So that's what we want to see out of the movie. And I feel like that's what we got out of the movie. But yeah, with that said, let's start getting into some puzzle pieces. What do you have for your first piece?
I mean, I think the first one I thought of was Jordan Peele's Us. Just the, you know, the idea of a family going on vacation and then their house being invaded by four people, two men and two women.
Yeah.
And I know the similarities kind of stop there, but just that sort of there's a shot of the four of them kind of standing in the like living room of the cabin. And that really reminded me of Us, you know, with the four untethered people just kind of standing there and you're just kind of like, what are they going to say?
Yeah, sure.
And like, having not really heard much about the story of Knock at the Cabin, I was like, I really have no idea. Like, what? I don't think I even saw the trailer. And so I think I was just kind of like, I have no, like, what are they going to, like, I knew it was something about like End of the World, just because I knew from like, I was like, I think like I read half a review or something. And of course I knew that that was the original title of the book. But I was like, I just don't, like, you know, what's going to be happening here. So
sure.
To me, that's my first thing that came to mind.
No, that's good. And yeah, I think like, as far as it being like a home invasion movie, like these are both movies where, yeah, that's the setup, but then it's about something completely different. And like, the trailer is like, I don't know how you escaped the trailer for Knock at the Cabin, because I saw that thing like 1,000 times in the last couple of months. Yeah. But I mean, the trailer definitely sets it up as like just a straight up home invasion movie. Although, you know, it's an M. Night Shyamalan movie, there's going to be something else going on. But kind of the same thing for Us. Like, the trailer set it up as just a new home invasion thriller, and then there's so much more going on there with the tethered and all this, you know, all this other stuff that movie gets into. So yeah, I mean, it's interesting to take that kind of subgenre and just kind of add on a whole lot of other things to it and kind of redirect in a way, but not exactly. But yeah, no, that's a good puzzle piece to kick it off with. I like that. And there are also filmmakers that I feel like there could be a lot of comparisons between, really.
Oh, for sure. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. So I'll go with my first piece, and that is going to be Darren Aronofsky's Noah, which is another movie that takes a story that's biblical in nature, that one's specifically a Bible story, and states it as pure fact, and no matter how horrible the events are in it, and like the awful human toll that, you know, God's work is going to, you know, create, everybody has to kind of take it seriously, and it's going to happen. And, you know, obviously we get into spoilers on the show, so everybody listening should know already that we're going to be talking spoilers in this conversation. But as it turns out, these, you know, religious weirdos, you know, it really is happening. And it's kind of maybe a change from the book, from what I've heard, little bit of a change. But I think that is part of what he wanted to explore. He wanted to explore a world in which some, you know, people believe in something and they don't like that it's happening, but it's happening one way or another. And then they have to deal with it. The people that they have found in this cabin have to deal with it. And everybody's stuck in this weird, horrible situation that, you know, God or whoever has put in play.
Right. Yeah. No, that's a really great connection. Yeah. I mean, I thought of Mother as well from Aronofsky, just sort of like very biblical and like kind of bringing in like, you know, I don't that feels insensitive to call them characters from the Bible, but like putting them in the real world, like with the kind of with the reveal that they're the Leonard and his little group are the four horsemen of the apocalypse. To me, that's kind of like reminded like Kristen Wiig being like the Herald in in Mother, and Michelle Pfeiffer being like Eve and stuff like that, sort of like translating that and putting into like modern times.
Yeah, absolutely. There's so many like parallels in Mother to the Bible, and yeah, yeah, I was thinking about it too. It was on my possible list of pieces here.
Right,
I always bring up Mother though, but but yeah, it could definitely come into play here. And you know, again, to those like some of the people who are kind of on the Knock at the Cabin is a bad movie side of things, like they're kind of like it's really weird. They're taking like this, oh, the religious weirdos are right, as like, okay, so this is a pro-religious cult movie. And I'm just like, how can you read it that way? It's a really weird thing.
Well, I mean, you know, it's like you're just not paying attention to M. Night Shyamalan's career. That's your takeaway. Because I feel like he's exploring... I feel like he explores faith and spirituality and belief, but like separated from any kind of nominal religion. Like it's just the idea, that like the concept of faith. So I feel like, you know, this is sort of the continuation of his movies like Signs and The Happening even. And I think even with, you know, with his Unbreakable trilogy, it's all this idea of like following these beliefs through their natural connection. And I mean, I had my doubts in this movie about like whether it's going to end with some kind of apocalyptic, you know, scenario. I was like, these could also just be, you know, fanatics who found each other and like had this like shared delusion and, you know, enabled and fed each other's delusions.
Sure.
But, and I was like, that doesn't feel like M. Night Shyamalan, you know,
right.
I don't think he would do that. And he didn't.
Yeah.
So I don't, I've been reading a lot of bad faith takes on this movie, especially from some LGBTQ writers who I think aren't as familiar with M. Night Shyamalan as they are claiming to be,
right,
and kind of what he does. But yeah, I don't know. It's, to me, I feel like his movies are, they're kind of like fables, morality plays. They're kind of just like, they're more so about the themes and the concept versus like literal what happens, you know, ABC plotting.
Yeah, absolutely. And like I said, also with the whole idea of adapting the book, you know, I think that these are just stories to play in and to explore ideas in. He's not saying this is right, this is wrong. He's just making a genre movie within, you know, these kinds of characters and settings.
I mean,
so
he's a showman, so he's going to show us stuff, you know?
Yeah, absolutely.
Like, from what I've heard, the book is a little bit more ambiguous. And to me, that just doesn't feel like an M. Night Shyamalan, you know, movie to have sort of a more ambiguous ending. Like
for
that.
Sure. Well, what do you got for your next piece?
Sort of this idea, like as I mentioned, this movie is, you know, centered around a queer couple, and they're sort of tasked with saving the world. And that really reminded me of this movie, Pride from 2014. It's a British film. It's sort of a true life story about this LGBTQ activist group in the 1980s who kind of work together to support the miners' strike in, I think it's England or Ireland. Sorry, it's been a while since I've seen the movie, but this sort of like, you know, really important strike that happened back in the 80s. And sort of, you know, a lot of the early scenes have, you know, these miners be kind of homophobic towards the activists, and they're kind of in this sort of the tension between the main characters is like, well, how much do we need to help these people who have shunned us, who have caused this violence, who have really inflicted some pain? And this idea that like, well, you know, we have the opportunity to help them, and we should kind of be the bigger person to support them and kind of bring them over to our side. So I thought about that a lot. This is sort of the conversations that like Ben Aldridge has, or a lot of the dialogue that he has about like, how much should we really care about this world that has ostracized us?
Right.
I read this really amazing article by Jason Adams about Knock at the Cabin and how it's about queer trauma and this idea of like, you know, when you're kind of you're being faced with this homophobic world and like, what's our duty in saving it, you know? And there are some points where I'm like, yeah, maybe it might be just best for this little family to like live alone and just be at peace, and not have to deal with, you know, being beat up in bars or not able to kiss each other at an orphanage when your family is growing. So,
right.
I mean, it's kind of an, you know, out there poll, but I just thought of this. I think Pride to me is the best example of a film about this idea of like, what is our duty as queer people to support the world around us?
Yeah, absolutely. I haven't seen it, but, you know, to that as a puzzle piece, like, you know, there's probably not enough movies that deal with that kind of
yeah.
thing.
And
so, I mean, even though this one is, you know, a violent, although all the violence appears off screen, which is kind of interesting in a way, but, you know, a violent, like, end of the world kind of crazy genre picture, like, you know, at least it's trying to, you know, have that conversation in a you know, interesting way in a movie that's going to be seen by a lot of people. So I think that's a good thing. So interesting piece there. I like that. I will go with Jeff Nichols' Take Shelter for my
that's next... on my list too.
Nice. That's such a good movie. Michael Shannon as this guy who is just so sure that something awful is coming, and you know, there's that, you know, feeling of uncertainty of like, you know, is he nuts? Is he not? And, you know, of course, much like with Noah, much like with this movie, you know, the person is, you know, basically right come the end. And, you know, again, we all enjoyed this movie. Like everybody loved Take Shelter when it came out, and nobody, you know, accused it of being pro conspiracy theorist nut jobs or anything like that. So why now? But, it, you know, it's just such a great movie, and the way that it builds that tension, you know, that's something that, Shyamalan's always been so great at. And he does here too, like every step of the way, you really have no idea, you know, if any of it is going to be true, even as the signs that it, you know, is true or happening, they all have that little shred of doubt behind them, whether it be the news footage being pre-recorded or, you know, various other reasons to doubt any of it. And he's just able to really keep that going the whole time, that sense of uncertainty.
Yeah, that's a really, I like that connection a lot. And I also feel that, Take Shelter really has this like kind of gray downcast look, if I remember correctly. It's been quite a while since I've seen it, but I just remember like it feels very cloudy, like the sky in the film a lot. And I feel like this movie also had that towards like the end, and just sort of this really sense of like doom and dread. And also just like people just not believing you when you're saying the world is ending. Like, I mean, it's like the classic, you know, Mother Goose story, I think, you know, you know, it's like people don't believe you, but then it's also very easy to get everyone all hysterical and paranoid. So that's a really good connection. I should watch that movie again. I really liked it.
I need to rewatch it too. And, you know, now that I think about it, I hadn't really thought about this, but, you know, we were just talking about like with that Pride puzzle piece. If I remember correctly, like the people in the town that Michael Shannon lives in are all like real assholes to him. So I think that question of like whether they're worth saving is definitely a part of it. So
doesn't he like lose his like health insurance like right when he needs to, like when he needs it? If I remember that being a really like important plot point. So again, there's like, you know, this like system that is really against helping people. Is this even worth, is this like a society that needs to be, you know, saved?
Absolutely. What do you got for your next piece?
I really thought about like Roland Emmerich's, you know, disaster movies like 2012 and The Day After Tomorrow and all those. Because like those have a lot of the images that we kind of saw in the news pieces. You know, the tsunamis and the planes and like hurricanes and all that. So I thought of that just like as, I mean, I know the, like, so I think 2012, is that like apocalypse related? I don't remember.
I think so. I saw it opening weekend and never went back. So.
2012, yeah. It's kind of this idea of like Mother Nature just like, you know, taking her revenge out on us and just causing all this havoc and the world ending and just like the panic. And they don't really spend a lot of time on that in Knock at the Cabin. Like, you don't really see people, like, dealing with that in real life in terms of, like, you know, it's not like we're following a family and, like, they're, like, you know, we only see it through the news.
You're right.
But it did make me wonder about, you know, like, what's going on the ground level.
Yeah.
and like
absolutely
what kind of panic is going on during all this.
Yeah, and I think that continues with Moonfall last year, and yeah, right. It which was another movie that like dealt with like, you know, our current obsession with the news and all the awful things on it, and like as the moon is falling to Earth with that ridiculous movie, you know, everybody's just kind of like going nuts and all the different, you know, major cities and all the bad things happening out there. And so, you know, it's another movie that kind of unfolds partially on the news and all of the reports and everything. And so like that, you know, it definitely, I think, plays with our, you know, obsession with the news and with seeing these kind of things unfold that way. And so, it, you know, there's plenty of connections to, I think, those Roland Emmerich kind of disaster movies.
Yeah, so it, you know, Moonfall definitely is interesting because I feel like Moonfall is like the less artful version of this movie, because I feel like in Moonfall, like that one scientist guy who's the one that like believes in, oh God, what was that annoying phrase they kept saying? Megastructure? Something like that. And like he's like this like online chat room incel scientist guy, and he gets proved right. And like I feel like when people complain about this movie like proving, like I saw some review saying this is like a QAnon, like a this movie supports QAnon and like, you know, conspiracy theories and stuff. And I'm like, no, Moonfall did that. This movie is very different from that. Like I feel like the fact that this four people met on a chat room was I think that was revealed much later in the movie. Like that wasn't part of the like hook of the movie or anything. Like,
right.
Cause I guess I spent a lot of the time wondering like, how do these people meet, you know?
Yeah.
So I feel like that plays into the ambiguity of the situation.
Yeah.
About like, is this some shared delusion or is this actually happening?
Yeah. And I actually like liked that a lot about how they all met and like, you know, the, what could be just a big coincidence, but to them feels so like set in the stars and real, like, you know, that they would all meet on the beach or whatever and walks a straight line. And like, that's just great storytelling. It's not confirmation of QAnon being real or anything like that. So, but yeah, no, that's great. If I remember correctly, I think that guy in Moonfall is also a big Elon Musk fan. So I'll go to my next puzzle piece though. And this is my last of the crazy person who we don't know if he's telling the truth or not. I'm going 10 Cloverfield Lane.
That's a good one.
Just such a great movie. And also, you know, a set in one location for 90% of the movie kind of movie as well. You know, just the idea of this guy who, you know he's nuts, but how nuts is he? Is he right that the world is ending and that there's this invasion going on out there? But he is right about that, but also he's crazy and he's a murderer. Like we really have that just ambiguity of the characters. And, you know, Dave Bautista as the, you know, the main guy of this foursome that has come to the cabin to request this sacrifice, you know, he's kind of this monster of a guy. And, you know, John Goodman being kind of that character in 10 Cloverfield Lane, they're both just such huge, great presences and great performances. So I think there's a lot of parallels that could be drawn there.
I think what's interesting is like John Goodman, like, you know, I of course know him from Roseanne and Monsters, Inc. Like those are like, I know he's done a lot of great movies, you know, like Big Lebowski, but like when I see him, I think of, you know, Roseanne and Monsters, Inc. just cause like that's my childhood and stuff. Sure. And so to see him play so menacing in that movie was really shocking. And I feel like Dave Bautista, you know, he's so big, but he's such a soft presence too.
Sure.
Like, he's very like, if he seems just in real life, he seems like the kind of guy that like is going to be really sweet and genuine with you. And so like, I like how both those actors kind of play the different parts of their personalities and personas, in these respective movies.
Absolutely. Well, what do you got for your next piece?
I was hoping that I would be able to think of this, but like, there's something that was really compelling about Leonard and hey, like not being able, he's like feeling really sad about like what he has to do. Mm-hmm. And I was like, I feel like there's a serial killer movie about like a serial killer or some kind of criminal who's like I have to do this, and I'm really sad that I have to do it. And I was like, it's not Silence of the Lambs. I was like, is it Zodiac? I don't, and it can't come to me, but like, I was hoping you might be able to recall that, because you have such vast knowledge, but I just like, I can't quite put my finger on like that kind of movie, but like, I feel like that's like a thing that I've seen before in like movies about people who have to do like evil things. There's like,
right,
the concept of like, I'm like, it's tragic that I have to do this to you, or that to put you in this situation, but I have to do it because of such and such reason.
Right, right. I have one that might fit. It's a little bit out there, but Adaptation, my favorite movie, when Chris Cooper is in the swamp and he's like, I'm sorry, mister, that I got to do this. And he's pointing the gun at him, and gets eaten by a crocodile. Batista gets, you know, killed too. So in the process of having to do this thing. So, you know, it kind of fits that kind of thing. So I like that. Yeah, no, that's, that is
more
thing.
Of like a general thematic one than a specific piece, but I was like, I was hoping it would come to me before we recorded this, but it's been a week and I still can't recall this. I feel like I see it in my mind. I just can't picture the title. I just can't remember the title.
Yeah, sure. No, that makes sense though, because that is a thing that we've seen before. So it's definitely a thematic thing that we see in other movies. But you know, we kind of talked a little of other Shyamalan on here, but I want to bring up Old as a puzzle piece. Mm-hmm. You know, we already talked about, like, you know, that both of these see him adapting other people's works. I mean, we've got that, you know, versus being a completely original story. But to me, more so, the thing that I like so much about Old and that I like so much about this, both of these movies feel like homages to their own genres in a way, whereas like Old is it's lovingly recreating everything about supernatural thrillers, like kind of stopping just before spoof territory in a way, at times, you know. And I feel like this is doing the same thing with both you know, spiritual based thrillers and home invasion thrillers, where it's like it's playing in that world and it's really just having a lot of fun in that world with like some really interesting setups and, like, you know, let's try some stuff. Let's take this and try some stuff and play with what you already know from all the movies you've seen before in this genre, but really just have some fun with it.
I definitely agree with that. And I also feel like I mentioned this on my own like podcast review of the movie, but I feel like Old is like a good companion to this movie, because like Old feels like a March 2020, April 2020 lockdown movie, where we're all just feeling like we're in one place and the world is passing us by. Mm-hmm. And like, you know, kind of like we all woke up and it's like, oh, it's 2022 already. Like, and then I feel like Knock at the Cabin is sort of like the continuation of our like pandemic life, where we're like going out and about, you know, we're going to diners, we're going to cabins, you know, people are like, but we're all just so like desensitized by all the like, you know, chaos going on in the news. You know, we mentioned that like the news is such a big part of this movie, and it's like Ben Aldridge again is able to like, you know, he questions the veracity of what's happening, because he's like, hey, we've seen pandemics, we've seen plane crashes, we've seen this and that happening, fires and all that, and tsunamis, you know. So I definitely like, it feels like this is like a COVID movie in a very different kind of way than Old was. I feel like that's a good, I feel like they're definitely companion pieces, especially now that we're like on the other side of Shyamalan's Unbreakable trilogy and like where he's going to go from here without those movies hanging over him. It's going to be interesting.
I like that point. And like, yeah, like Ben Aldridge's character, he's like, he's just kind of had enough with everything, with these crazies in his cabin and with the world outside and just everything else. And you're right. Like, that's kind of where we're all at with, you know, once, you know, COVID quote unquote ended, which it sure as shit has not. But, you know, we're all just back out in the world now. So it definitely feels like we're all kind of in those shoes a little bit. So, that's a really good point. I have one more puzzle piece. Do you have any more pieces?
Well, going back to Jordan Peele, I just like the in Nope, sort of the scene where, you know, all those people are in, you know, they're getting like sucked up by Jean Jacket, and you hear them like screaming, and like you can hear them screaming from the ground. So I thought of that because of the like the airplane crashing. You could like Shyamalan has them like, as you hear them screaming as the plane's going down. It's just, you know, that was such a visceral moment for me in Nope because it really scared me.
Oh yeah,
and freaked me out. And so I thought of that with Knock at the Cabin as well. Just like a more like, you know, filmmaking puzzle piece than a thematic one.
Yeah, no, that works because yeah, like there is some real, like we talked about it, you know, in connection with like the Roland Emmerich films, which is like the polar opposite as far as how it's portrayed, like just the big giant like 10-minute sequences of destruction, whereas here it's just like you know, these little news clippings. And but yeah, the way that it's put together, it's all horrifying still. And so yeah, the way that they did those sequences in Nope, you know, a lot of great sound design and just like kind of working on really a relatively smallish budget, but really effectively putting it together. There's some great visual stuff happening there. And so yeah, that it's really well put together that way. So yeah, I like that. And again, you know, there's so many connections that could be made, I feel like, between Shyamalan and
I feel like Jordan Peele is a Shyamalan guy. And yeah, I'm sure Ed Knight is a Jordan Peele guy.
Definitely. Well, my last piece, just a kind of combined Coen Brothers puzzle piece. In general, really Coen Brothers, but I'll put in A Serious Man because of these good people just trying to have a nice life, getting screwed with for biblical reasons. Also, No Country for Old Men with you know, this kind of, you know, this person who shows up and just causes all this havoc, and they're so enjoyable to watch, even though they're so horrifying. And you know, it's kind of split between the four of these people, but mainly Batista, you know, as this character who just shows up, and also like the world just getting worse and worse. And these four people are kind of emblematic of all that, like we talked about the QAnon stuff, the religious fanaticism stuff, like the conspiracy theory stuff, like all of that kind of rolled into one as just this world. But you know, to the overall Coen Brothers theme, I do, you know, again, I'm talking about like how Shyamalan's having fun in this world. I do think these four guys, well, two guys, two girls, but I do think that they are kind of dumb-ish, you know, and I feel like the Coen Brothers, their characters can sometimes have like a real like goofiness to them, you know. They're clearly laughing at them in the background, and I feel like Shyamalan is too, and that's another reason why, like, when we come back to the criticisms this movie has had, I just don't get how you can read it that way, because I do think Shyamalan is kind of looking down at these four people, and I think he's not judging them necessarily, but he sees how ridiculous they are, and yeah, it turned out to be right, but they're just along for the ride in a way, and they want off as much as possible, but they can't get off because they don't want the world to end, and they just know that it's all real. You know, I thought a lot about Coen Brothers' characters, how they don't quite understand what these situations are that they've gotten themselves into, but they're stuck in them, and we get to watch them fall in the process.
I definitely can agree with that, and I think one of the recurring themes in almost all of his movies is the strength of the family unit, which is why I'm kind of like, we're always in the perspective of the people who of Ben Aldridge, Jonathan Groff, and Kristen Kui as their daughter. I feel that it's their movie, and I think like Dave Bautista, I think, you know, he's top billing and he's a central force of the movie, but I agree with you in that, like, I feel like there's a version of this movie that's like maybe like 10% more comedic and more ridiculous. I mean, I think this movie's pretty serious. Just like, I don't think it's as like goofy as like Old can be, you know. I mean, I love Old, but I feel like Old is playing at a higher decibel than this movie is. Definitely, you know, to me it's like the distance between like Unbreakable and Split, you know, because I think Unbreakable is a very still, somber movie and Split is very chaotic and all over the place.
That's a great comparison. Yeah.
So absolutely. I think that, I feel like he's really like believes in this family unit. And so by contrast, the Four Horsemen people are like, yeah, I mean, they sound ridiculous because like, how do you even go to someone's house and be like, hey, by the way, kill one of yourselves?
Like, and the fact that they had to make their own weapon and they made these like Dungeons and Dragons weapons, right, like right. It's ridiculous.
I wonder if I watch this movie again, if I'll find it a little goofier than I did the first time. Because like the first time I'm just kind of like in the zone of this like poor couple that has to like deal with this impossible, because obviously they're not going to kill their daughter. I mean, she's too cute. So I'm like dealing with this impossible situation. But actually I did have one more piece I just thought of. Just sort of this ending of like kind of like the love of this family is kind of what allows Jonathan Groff's character to sacrifice himself. That just kind of reminded me of like Interstellar, sort of like the power of love and you know, kind of like love bringing, you know, bringing Matthew McConaughey's character back to earth in a sense. So just like I don't know, just like love as this like abstract but very powerful force concept that's like very real and physical. That I just thought of that just now and talking about the family unit.
Sure.
But yeah, that's my last one, I swear.
Yeah. Yeah, no, that's a good one to throw in there though, for sure. I mean, it's also a movie that deals with like, you know, these just majorly fantastical elements, but really when it comes down to it, it's that family unit, like you said. Right. So so that's at the heart of it. So great. That's a great list of puzzle pieces. Let's read them down here. We talked about Us, Noah, Mother, Pride, Take Shelter, a bunch of Roland Emmerich disaster movies, 10 Cloverfield Lane, killers or characters who are sad that they have to do what they have to do. I brought up Adaptation as a possibility for that. If anybody has a better example, send it in. Also Old, Nope, the Coen Brothers, and Interstellar. I think it's a really interesting list. I mean, obviously we have a lot of you know, people who may or may not be crazy, but it kind of goes into other other directions as well. Are there any closing thoughts, anything that we didn't quite get into while going through puzzle pieces here?
I found this movie to be really moving and emotional. I have a lot of respect for M. Night Shyamalan as a filmmaker, as a business person, as, you know, a husband and father, to be honest. So I'm just like glad that he's like doing this stuff. And he's working with, you know, the money that he puts into his own movies, and he gets, you know, this is an M. Night Shyamalan product through and through. Whether you like it or not, but you got to respect the commitment to his own vision, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. And it is vision for sure. I mean, that was going to be my closing thought. Like, you know, I talk about, you know, him finding these stories to play in. I mean, you know, visually, some of the stuff that he does is so interesting, and like, you know, nobody else really plays like that. Like some of these shots, starting the film off with these extreme close-ups of all the characters, it's so good. It's crazy. It's like, come on, do more of that stuff. I love you, M. Night, for doing stuff like that. You know?
Yeah, I love an extreme close-up. You know, like Jonathan Demme, Scorsese, Shyamalan, like these guys. I think Jordan Peele as well. Like they just like have this immense power in their close-ups, and I think do a lot of storytelling just by that.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I think that does it for Knock at the Cabin. Manish, is there another film you watched recently you'd like to recommend to our listeners?
Well, speaking of Scorsese, I've been watching a lot of his documentaries and short films that are on HBO Max, and just like going back through the catalog to see like what I've missed. So I recommend those, like Italian American, you know, what's a girl like you doing in a place like this? Those are like the two ones that I saw. The Big Shave, I think, is incredible. And I also watched The Color of Money, which is on Amazon Prime for the first time. And like on paper, that movie is like whatever sports to me, like who cares? I don't like sports, but like I was like almost in tears because the filmmaking is just so beautiful. Like there's just like the way his camera moves, his editing, the like the music that he has, and just like, oh God, it's like, It sounds so stupid to say because he's Scorsese, but like he's so good at what he does. I watched Casino again, and I'm like, this movie's just like, who's doing it like him? No one, you know?
Right. Like, that's how I feel every time I watch something from him. I'm just like, of course.
I'm like, you constantly know? Like, are we? It's like he's so praised that I'm like, it's almost underrated because like, it just. I don't know. I just like it's speechless. So
yeah,
I would say definitely like I've been having a Scorsese moment. Color of Money would be like the one that I'm like, go check it out because it feels like random. I forget that he had made it, but I was like, oh, I should watch this. And it's like mind blowing, honestly.
Awesome. I haven't seen any of those shorts actually. So
They're really good. And it's like, you know, he had the vision from the beginning. I mean, much like the Fablemans with Spielberg, it's like he knew what he was doing from the start, you know?
Yeah.
Crazy.
That's awesome. Great recommendation there. Well, tell people where they can find you and your podcast.
You can find me on Twitter at vertigay314. That's V-E-R-T-I-G-A-Y 314. Also, yes, I host a podcast called It Pod to Be You, which is about romance movies, which you can find on any podcast platform. Right now, we are in the midst of a bad romance miniseries talking about movies like Rosemary's Baby, Jackie Brown, Atonement, Get Out as well. Speaking of Jordan Peele, this week is the 4th year anniversary of the podcast. So we're talking about Mulholland Drive. So that's going to be coming out on Valentine's Day or that Valentine's Day week. So look out for that. Or this is after that. Go back and download that. but yeah, so that's, It Pod to Be You. It's a fun show. David, you were on it talking about The Apartment over the summer during our 1960s miniseries, and that was a wonderful episode. So check that out as well.
Absolutely. Well, this was great. And as always, I'd love to have you back again sometime.
Yes, thank you. I'd love to be back.
I'm Josh Bell.
And I'm Jason Harrison. We co-host a podcast called Awesome Movie Year.
Each season, we take a look back at an awesome year for movies, which is every year.
We deep dive into these specific years and we pick out why they were such great years for films. We go over the biggest hits, the biggest flops, the best picture, some personal picks, some cult classics.
Years we've covered in past seasons include 1994, 2003, 1977, and 1984, and we've got all of film history to look forward to. So check us out at awesomemovieyear.com or wherever you listen to podcasts. All right, so I hope you enjoyed that conversation about Knock at the Cabin. Thanks to Manish for joining me on that one, and thank you to you for listening. If you like what we do here on Piecing It Together, make sure you are subscribed, of course. Also, maybe drop a 5-star rating and review over on Apple Podcasts or wherever it is that you're listening. Really appreciate those and helps something. We don't know, but we're supposed to ask. So drop a 5-star rating. We appreciate it. You could also follow us on social media at Piecing Pod. Join our Facebook group, Popcorn and Puzzle Pieces. Don't forget about the live show on February 23rd. More information is in the show notes and on our website, piecingpod.com, where you can win tickets right now. So go check that out. Also, we do have a Patreon, the Produced by David Rosen Patreon, where I post bonus and advanced content for Piecing It Together, as well as Awesome Movie Year, and from my music career. Lots of great stuff over there. It's patreon.com/bydavidrosen. Check it out. So as we always do with these episodes, I close with a piece of my music. And let's see, what are we going to play today? You know, I'm going to play a song. I might have played this a long time ago. I don't remember. But this is a song from one of my free bonus albums that's exclusively on my Bandcamp. The song is called Home. And it seems like a good fit for a little home invasion thriller like Knock at the Cabin. Why not? Let's play Home. This is from a free album called Like Ashes that's exclusively available on my Bandcamp, davidrosen.bandcamp.com. So if you like this song, you can go get the rest of this album for free and maybe check out some of my other albums while you're at it. So hope you enjoy it. We'll be back with more Piecing It Together real soon.
an All Points West production, produced by David Rosen in Las Vegas.